Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include ProQuest, creators of ProQuest One Academic, unifying journals, ebooks, videos, and dissertations across disciplines in one mobile-enabled interface. ProQuest.com/go/NPR.
Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Protesters attracted international attention 3 years ago when they demonstrated to halt the construction of the Dakota Access Pipeline on the Standing Rock Reservation in the Dakotas. Since then, state lawmakers across the country have enacted or are mulling model legislation intended to discourage such protests at so-called critical infrastructure projects, including oil and gas pipelines. Dave Thompson is the news director for Prairie Public Media. He covered the Standing Rock protests. We thought we'd look back at that time with him. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
So, Dave Thompson, what were the protests like? Tell us, you know, what was it like on the ground there?
It was very interesting. It started out very small, and it grew, and grew, I think, larger than anybody had expected on Standing Rock. And at one point, there were more than 10,000 protesters at the site, and there were three separate camps at that site. And it really turned into a much bigger than thing that anybody had even realized would happen. And, of course, when you've got a number of people like that, there are some trouble happens.
What kind of trouble?
We had some protesters who burned a car on a bridge, for example, and the bridge was damaged. There was also something that the pipeline company sent some attack dogs. And that was not the company themselves, but they hired a private security firm, and the security firm brought some attack dogs, so there was something like that. And there were some people who were just kind of afraid that things might really blow up.
When you say, you know, three camps, 10,000 people, I'm just thinking about how would you would do that, just the infrastructure involved in supporting that many people, because they came and stayed, right?
Right. A lot of them stayed. Most of them stayed, as a matter of fact. There was some in and out, but most of them did stay.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say the infrastructure was an issue because just talk about things that people need, food, water, shelter, turned out to be a real challenge. A lot of the protesters stayed in cars or they actually brought campers down. And sanitary facilities were few and far between.
How did the local officials handle the trespassing there?
Well, it got to be interesting because, you know, the biggest cities that are close to where the protest was, the capital, Bismarck, and its sister city, Mandan. Now, it's in Morton County, so the Morton County Sheriff was pretty much in charge of security there. But in Bismarck, it happened with a legislative session coming up. And legislators did some makeshift things. They put in temporary magnetometers at the entrance of the Capitol. That had never happened before. And they were screening to make sure that people wouldn't come into the chambers and disrupt things with, you know, carrying weapons.
Did the protest, when the protest started to grab the headlines, you know, was there, at that point, was there actually malicious destruction of property?
I would say there was some malicious destruction of property, but again, it's not as prevalent as one might think. If you think about riots in the past, this was not necessarily a riot, although law enforcement considered it pretty much as a riot at times.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the protesters who attracted international attention 3 years ago when they demonstrated to halt the construction of the Dakota Access Pipeline on the Standing Rock Reservation. Since then, state lawmakers across the country, including in Ohio, have enacted or are mulling, in Ohio's case, model legislation intended to discourage such protests at so-called critical infrastructure projects, including oil and gas pipelines. Ohio has its share of those. Dave Thompson is the news director for Prairie Public Media. He covered the Standing Rock protests. If you have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. North Dakota's governor, Dave Thompson, signed into law a measure that limits protests at the critical infrastructure facilities. And I'm wondering, I mean, how would that have changed, or does anybody talk about how that might have changed the outcome at Standing Rock?
Nobody really thinks it would have changed the outcome at Standing Rock because, you know, I will tell you that the majority of the protesters were there were there basically to be peaceful, to show their disappointment or dissatisfaction with the pipeline. There were some people there who were representing environmental, let's get away from oil and gas and that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
There was just that one, you know, small groups of protesters who maybe took it to the other level. Whether or not it would have really made much of a difference, given the size of the protest at Standing Rock, is up for debate. And I've heard a lot of debate in the legislature, in the city commission chambers, whether it would have made that much of a difference.
And yet it did pass. The governor signed it into law. Who was behind it there?
Oh, yes. The majority leader in the House was the one who came up with the he was the sponsor of the legislation,
mm-hmm.
and there were several parts to it. One was an attempt to ban protesters from covering their faces and saying that was an automatic misdemeanor.
Like they were trying to do in Hong Kong, you mean?
Correct. And there was that one camp that I was mentioning where they maybe 30, 40 of them, had their faces covered. They did not want to be identified.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that. And of course, you had one small incident in another pipeline where the pipeline was damaged, and then that law came into play too.
Mm-hmm.
So if you damage pipeline, you can be arrested and taken in and charged with damaging critical infrastructure.
Is there a sense that the way the law was passed in North Dakota that it would discourage? I mean, that might discourage people from protesting.
That was the hope of some people who supported it. However, I don't think it has had that effect at this point. We will find out in a couple of weeks because there is a hearing to expand the capacity of the Dakota Access Pipeline. It's going to double the capacity from 500,000 barrels of oil a day to 1 million barrels of oil a day. They're doing that through compressors. There won't be any infrastructure pipeline under the lake.
Mm-hmm.
But there is going to be some concern that there will be protesters there.
And so we'll find out. But will it be at the site? And weren't they automatically trespassing anyways? Isn't there already laws against that?
Yes, there were. And the trespassing issue got to be a big discussion point because some of them were trespassing on Corps of Engineers land. And the Corps of Engineers did not really do anything about it, and that's a whole other issue about some of the fights between the state and the Corps of Engineers about who's going to pay for the security and for the police protection. But they did also, they were on tribal land, and the tribes, at least at first, said, okay, that's fine. But there were some members of the tribe and some members who had power in the tribe who were saying, maybe we should do something about this and move them off that land. It didn't get that far. By that time, the pipeline, President Trump had signed that executive order, get the pipeline built, and everything was pretty much dissipated after that.
They claimed, you mentioned a little bit about how protesters claimed law enforcement used strong arm tactics and were abusive. And I'm wondering if that came into play at all with this legislation, what extent can they prohibit?
It did to an extent. The strong arm tactics were, you know, firing things like rubber bullets into the ground. And I know that the local sheriff in Morton County was trying very hard to keep a lid on it, not using a lot of police presence. But as some of the other law enforcement people came in, naturally, skirmishes happened.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's probably some on both sides. And I don't want to be equivocal about that. But in terms of what I saw, there was some on both sides.
Was anyone ever hurt?
Not to that extent, as we know. There was one report of somebody who claimed that a flash grenade had hurt them, but it was revealed later that this person was preparing using a cylinder of, you know, gas used for grills,
Propane.
Propane.
Mm-hmm.
And it exploded, and she was hurt.
Hmm. And you're saying that there's going to be a hearing about the law?
Well, no, this is a hearing about expanding the pipeline.
Expanding the pipeline.
And well, you're worried about pipeline capacity, not expanding the infrastructure, but adding more compressor stations. That's going to be down at Linton, North Dakota, in a couple of weeks, and there could be protests there.
Well, we will stand by and wait for those. Dave Thompson, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate your insights.
You are very welcome.
Dave Thompson is news director for Prairie Public Media. He covered the protests that attracted so much attention 3 years ago when they demonstrated to halt the construction of the Dakota Access Pipeline on the Standing Rock Reservation in the Dakotas. Since then, state lawmakers across the country have enacted, or in Ohio's case, are mulling model legislation intended to discourage such protests at so-called critical infrastructure projects, including oil and gas pipelines. We're going to talk about that coming up, so stay with us. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
How do you turn what you love into a career? On season 2 of the Rivet podcast from WOSU, hear firsthand from students translating their interests into jobs without college. Listen to This American Graduate Project as we highlight the next generation of workers in the state's top industries of agriculture, insurance, and healthcare. Support for the Rivet podcast series comes from COSI. Subscribe now at wosu.org/rivet, on the WOSU mobile app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Protesters attracted international attention 3 years ago when they demonstrated to halt the construction of the Dakota Access Pipeline on the Standing Rock Reservation in the Dakotas. Since then, state lawmakers across the country have enacted, or in Ohio's case, are mulling model legislation intended to discourage such protests at so-called critical infrastructure projects, including oil and gas pipelines. Daniel Takagi is a law professor at Ohio State University Moritz College of Law. He's an expert on constitutional law and the First Amendment. Welcome back.
Thanks so much for having me, Ann.
Jen Hensley, Sierra Club State Lobby and Advocacy Director. Welcome to the show, Jen.
Thanks for having me, Ann. I'm happy to be here.
Senator Frank Hoagland is the primary sponsor of Senate Bill 33. He was unable to join us. And according to the Columbus Dispatch, Koch Industries and Findlay-based Marathon Petroleum Corporation are leading the charge to create these laws across the country. Koch Industries did not respond to our request for interviews, nor did the American Legislative Exchange Council. That's this conservative organization backed by the Charles Koch Institutes, which prepares model legislation on a variety of topics, ranging from gun rights to tort reform. We've talked about them before on the show. Jen, from where you sit, is there any rhyme or reason to where the model legislation is popping up across the country? We know, obviously, North Dakota, that makes sense. You know, the Dakota Pipeline protests spurred that. But why Ohio?
Well, Ohio actually does have a decent, you largely import fracking waste, but neighboring states of Pennsylvania and other places have a great deal of fracking. And so there's a lot of desire to build out a lot of small pipelines all across the country to move that gas into market.
Okay.
So Ohio has a lot of pipelines running through it at this point.
The model legislation specifically holds conspiring organizations, that's in the legislation or at least in the description, responsible for damages to personal or real property while trespassing. And I'm wondering, what are the implications for organizations like Sierra Club, Jen?
Well, we don't fully know what the implications are yet. We just saw this enacted also in Texas, and we're now seeing folks being brought to court in Texas on this particular issue. But we're really concerned about it, obviously, because we give people a space to congregate and share values and advocate for keeping their environment clean. So it gives us concern, but we're still going to keep protecting the environment and doing the work that we need to do.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We are talking about plans, model legislation that's been introduced in the Ohio General Assembly that is intended to discourage protests at so-called critical infrastructure places like where pipelines are. Dan Tokaji, where does the right to protest impede the private entities' right to protect their private property?
Yeah, I think to answer this question, we really need to put these so-called critical infrastructure bills, which are really ultimately about interfering with freedom of speech, in the context of First Amendment law. And let me just state the basic principle that has been a core part of our free speech law for many decades. It was best said, I think, by the great Justice Thurgood Marshall. Above all else, the First Amendment means that the government may not target speech based on its messages, its ideas, its content, or its viewpoint. And that's exactly what the proposed law in Ohio, as well as the laws about so-called critical infrastructure enacted in many other states or proposed in many other states, are intended to do. If you look down the list of so-called critical infrastructure, what you see is a laundry list of big money special interests. Petroleum, electricity, chemical, polymer, rubber manufacturing, water intake, natural gas, telecom, right? And these are entities that under this bill would be protected in the sense that certain activities around their locations would be prohibited. There's a prohibition on quote-unquote tampering with these activities or with the properties in question, as well as a prohibition applicable to organizations like the Sierra Club that are quote unquote complicit. This is a very vague law that, if you just scratch the surface a little bit, seems deliberately designed to impede and indeed to intimidate those who would be exercising their First Amendment rights.
Jen Hensley, are there examples in Ohio of protests that have led to damaging of critical infrastructure?
No, and that's the false narrative here, is there are already existing laws that apply. If you criminally trespass, you criminally trespass. We already have laws on the books, and this is actually just a special exemption for corporate interests. And so this is just taking it to a different level. There have been a couple cases in the past up in the Dakota area, but those individuals have been prosecuted for trespassing. So there is no need for these laws. They're often duplicative, and they're especially designed to be penalizing and punitive. And a lot of the individuals that participate in protests could be swept up and frankly get a felony conviction for exercising their right to free speech.
And it's important to point out here the relationship between this set of laws and other things that have been going on within the domain of freedom of speech. We've seen from the Roberts Court, from the Supreme Court, decisions that enhance the voice of wealthy corporations, most notably, but not only, the Citizens United decision, which gave corporations, in effect, an unlimited right to spend money to influence federal elections and also, as a practical matter, to influence policymaking, because mm-hmm. that's what campaign money is often intended to do. So you've got the enhancement of big corporations' voice on one side, while on the other hand, you see these attempts to suppress the speech of those who would protest their activities, for example, oil and gas pipelines. And more recently, another decision from the Supreme Court, the Janus decision from just last year, that effectively weakens the voice of public sector labor unions. So on the one hand, we've seen an enhancement of the voice of big money special interests, especially corporations, while on the other side, we continue to see the suppression of the voices of those on the other side, people who are less wealthy, who don't have millions of dollars to spend on campaign ads or other attempts to influence public policy.
But if they don't hurt anything, wouldn't just as what, going back to what Jen said, aren't there already laws on the books if you're trespassing?
Exactly. They're already on the laws that prohibit trespassing. So why do we need these extra laws with exorbitant fines and the possibility of civil litigation from a big oil and gas company being brought against you? There's no reason for these laws but to suppress legitimate free speech, protesting, for example, pipelines and other energy projects.
The sponsor, Senator Hoagland, in a prepared statement said that he has always fought for the people's right to have their voice heard and that this bill will further reinforce that and create a safer atmosphere for all Ohioans to speak out for what they believe. Jen Hensley, is that your understanding? Have you talked to him?
No, it's not my understanding. I look at this law and this proposed bill, and I don't see how that helps people have a voice. In fact, I think it intimidates them. It says to them, you're going to get a felony conviction if you're found guilty of trespassing. It basically penalizes organizations like my own that are really trying to advocate people to engage in an active democracy. And honestly, this is an unprecedented handaway to corporate interests. They use eminent domain for these pipelines, and I see no protections in there for property owners that, in theory, eminent domain is to be used for the public good. And this is actually being used for private gain by corporations, and a landowner could be caught up in a criminal trespass case own property.
Yeah, and I totally agree with what Jen just said. And let me add another element to this. There is, in the proposed Ohio legislation, a provision allowing for 10 times the fine applicable to individuals to be levied upon organizations like the Sierra Club or like smaller organizations that may be very limited in their resources that are, quote unquote, complicit in their activities. And this is lifted almost directly from the ALEC proposal, this mm-hmm. industry-backed group that you mentioned earlier, except for they left a blank in there in the model bill for the amount of times the factor by which the individual fine would be multiplied against organizations. Ohio filled in 10, and they have this language about complicity, which makes the law even broader and even more punitive with respect to speech than the model bill from ALEC.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. So could that be then, Dan Takagi, that an organization like the Sierra Club could just let people meet at an office of theirs? Is that what you mean by broadly
Who knows?
Okay.
And this is the real risk, is that organizations like the Sierra Club, or again, smaller organizations that could very easily be bankrupted by a $100,000 fine, will be discouraged, will be intimidated, will be fearful of organizing any kind of protest activity. Because look, the reality is that even if you're a group operating in good faith, one can never be completely sure that one of the people participating in your protest activities won't go too far, won't step over the line, and then bang, you could be on the hook for not just tens of thousands, but to up to $100,000 in fines, depending on the circumstances.
So, Jen Hensley, how does an organization like Sierra Club, I mean, are you talking to other environmental groups about this and what the implications are for whether you let people even meet in an office of yours, or are you going to test it? Are you going to push it?
Well, we're going to push it. We're going to keep working. We fight against these bills all the time, and we're going to keep doing that. I think one thing to note is that there was recently a decision that came down out of South Dakota. They had implemented a law that was similar to Ohio, probably slightly more punitive. And the courts actually found that this was unconstitutional and was a direct hit on free speech. So we're going to keep trying that angle, and we're going to keep working on
that. Was that a state court or a federal court?
Federal court.
Federal court, okay.
And interestingly, the decision in that case, which was about a South Dakota law that, like the proposed Ohio law, was designed to discourage protesting.
It's from the same model legislation.
Yeah, and it quotes an opinion from Justice Clarence Thomas, a conservative justice, but one who has written that the basic standard is, are these laws adopted because of disagreement with the message that the speech is designed to convey?
Or is there a real concern about property damage?
Well, we've got trespassing laws on the books. Why don't we just enforce those laws? So it seems very clear that the Ohio law and many of the other laws that have been proposed or enacted in other states about quote-unquote critical infrastructure are really intended to suppress speech.
Is there an example of another kind of law like this that has been litigated, or that the courts found, you know, something in history that we could look at?
I think in at least recent history, the South Dakota law,
the one
Jen,
that Jen just
alluded to, is probably the closest. But, you know, we're going to see this issue come to the courts very soon. The South Dakota law is somewhat differently worded, but the critical question, and there are actually two critical questions. One is intent, right? Is the law, right, whatever it does, is it really intended to deal with a legitimate interest like trespassing, like actual security risks, or is it intended to suppress speech? And the second is vagueness. Is the law sufficiently clear, giving people notice of what's prohibited and not? The South Dakota federal court found problems on both those fronts, and I think the same problems would exist with the Ohio statute if it were enacted.
So when the sponsor, Senator Hoagland, says in a prepared statement that that this bill will further reinforce a person's right to be heard and create a safer atmosphere for all Ohioans to speak on what they believe, it doesn't mean that that's what the bill will do.
That's the opposite of the truth. This bill is designed, in fact, it's tailor-made to suppress protesting against oil and gas and energy and all sorts of other industries like telecom. That's its transparent purpose. And look, it's no surprise that neither Senator Hoagland nor ALEC nor any of the other industry groups that are supporting this law are not willing to come on the air, because this kind of bill would be exposed for exactly what it is, a transparent effort to suppress freedom of speech.
Yeah, Senator Frank Hoagland, the primary sponsor of Senate Bill 33, said he was unable to join us. And according to the Columbus Dispatch, Koch Industries and Findlay-based Marathon Petroleum Corporation are leading the charge to create these laws. Koch Industries did not respond to our request for interviews, nor did the American Legislative Exchange Council. As I described it, it's a conservative organization. It's backed by Charles Koch Institutes, and it prepares model legislation on a variety of topics, ranging from gun rights to tort reform. I mean, it pretty much runs runs the gamut. This is the legislation du jour, I guess, right now. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. My guests are Jen Hensley. She's a Sierra Club State Lobbying and Advocacy Director, and also Daniel Takagi. He's a law professor at Ohio State University, and he specializes in the First Amendment. Is there a sense that this kind of law will discourage people, Jen Hensley?
So far, we've not seen that. People feel, I think, we have a long tradition of gathering and engaging in democracy. So right now, I'm optimistic that people are still going to engage. And I frankly have to keep that optimism because we've seen through the civil rights, through our labor strikes and things like that, that people's voices need to be heard. And so I'm hopeful and optimistic that people will continue to protest these.
Well, I guess I have a somewhat different view on this. I think that once this bill were to become law, if in fact it does, I think it's going to have a chilling effect on speech. And I would fully expect that groups that are concerned about this chilling effect will go to court to get this law enjoined before it is permitted to be enforced, because you can be sure that the industry groups that are behind it will be doing everything that is in their power to scare people and to use this law to influence law enforcement authorities, or maybe even bring their own actions to use this law to suppress speech. So I'm not nearly so optimistic. I think this law would have a chilling effect on speech if it were allowed to become law.
I mean,
it does
put you kind of nose to nose against some of the richest people in the world, Jen Hensley, right?
Yeah, it's an uncomfortable spot. And a big part of my career, actually,
is doing this. Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you talked with other environmental groups about this, Jen Hensley?
Yeah, I actually work with a number of folks all across the country, and many are working on this issue. And it's not a single, big group. It's a lot of little groups, mm-hmm. From local clergy who have been doing the work with their congregation to ranchers in Wyoming. So there are a lot of people concerned about these laws. And I think, to Dan's point, we have not seen anybody fully prosecuted under these laws. So we'll see if that has an impact. But for the time being, we are all still engaging and challenging things.
One thing that's important to note is that this law doesn't just allow criminal penalties, including potential jail time, mm-hmm. as well as exorbitant fines, but it's civilly enforceable too, which right. means that a company like a big oil company that thinks there's been a violation or complicity by an organization could bring a lawsuit and bring all its financial resources to bear on suppressing the speech of both individuals and groups. And there's a name for that kind of lawsuit. It's called a strategic lawsuit against public participation. Many states, but not Ohio, have laws that are designed to prevent these kinds of abusive lawsuits that are intended to suppress freedom of speech.
Jen Hensley, I have to say goodbye to you. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. That's Jen Hensley. She is the Sierra Club State Lobbying and Advocacy Director. Staying with us, Daniel Takagi. He's a law professor at Ohio State University Moritz College of Law. He specializes in the First Amendment, which does come into play with this legislation that is being considered or enacted across the country. It is intended to discourage protests at so-called critical infrastructure projects, including oil and gas pipelines. And just to remind people, we did invite the primary sponsor of Senate Bill 3033 on the show. He was unable to join us. That's Senator Frank Hoagland. According to the Columbus Dispatch, Koch Industries and Findlay-based Marathon Petroleum Corporation are leading the charge to create these laws. Koch Industries did not respond to our request for an interview, nor did the American Legislative Exchange Council. That's long for ALEC. It's a conservative organization backed by the Charles Koch Institutes, and it prepares model legislation on all kinds of topics, ranging from gun rights to tort reform, and now including this issue. view of protests at critical infrastructure sites. So if you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Protesters attracted international attention 3 years ago when they demonstrated to halt the construction of the Dakota Access Pipeline on the Standing Rock Reservation in the Dakotas. Since then, state lawmakers across the country have reacted with a model legislation being put out by the American Legislative Exchange Council. It's a conservative organization that does legislation on any number of issues. In this case, it's model legislation intended to discourage protests at so-called critical infrastructure projects, including oil and gas pipelines. And as our earlier guest, Jen Hensley of the Sierra Club State Lobbying, where she is the state lobbying and advocacy director, explained, there are lots of pipelines crisscrossing Ohio for lots of reasons. Still with us is OSU Moritz College of Law professor Daniel Tokaji. Greg Pace is a local environmental activist. He focuses on energy issues, and he submitted testimony opposing the legislation in Ohio. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you.
So did you testify or you just submitted written testimony?
Well, both, but I stood up there. I actually stood up there last spring in the Judiciary Committee in the Senate, and then about 2 weeks ago in the House
It's passed the Senate then, and now it's in the House Public Utilities Committee. What do you make of this? Why does it matter to you?
Well, two things. For one thing, this is kind of the latest in the onslaught against people in Ohio, because I've been doing this since 2011 in terms of the oil and gas energy activism or advocacy since fracking came into Ohio, and with the big rigs. And basically, we're finding out now everything that we were afraid of back in 2011. With all the water pollutions, especially air pollutions, you know, the biggest things I've been seeing when I've gone to eastern Ohio is people get sick because of the air pollution.
So you're saying that what does this legislation do to affect what you do?
Well, we want to get fracking, if not banned, at least toned down, at least get the vision of the industry and the system to not think that we've got to frack everything that we can. We've got to tone it down.
How would this legislation affect your ability to do that if it was enacted
in
Ohio?
Well, for protesting, the people are kind of asleep in a lot of ways. And protesting is what we do to try to wake people up, to get people to understand issues. Like with our Columbus Community Bill of Rights issues, you know, with community rights. We're trying to get ordinances and charter amendments passed in Ohio to keep this stuff out of our communities. But most of the time when we talk to people, they're really clueless about what's going on. And the industry doesn't want people to know what's going on because they can continue to do things as long as people don't understand what's going on. And that's how it's always been. And so part of protesting is to get people to understand the issues, to understand the pollutions and why we wouldn't really want it when they say that we do.
Obviously, it's bedrock in our country, Dan Tokaji. It's in the Constitution. It's the First Amendment.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. And going back to something we were talking about a few minutes ago, Ann, it's important to recognize that it's not just criminal penalties like going to jail or getting a $100,000 fine that can intimidate people from engaging in speech, but also civil lawsuits, especially if you've got a deep pocket like the oil industry who's going after protesters. We should remember our constitutional history, right? One of the most famous Supreme Court decisions of all time is New York Times versus Sullivan. That case actually arose some listeners may not remember, from a full-page ad in the New York Times on behalf of Martin Luther King and other civil rights protesters. And the police commissioner down in Alabama brought a lawsuit and got a $500,000 judgment against the New York Times and these civil rights groups, which the Supreme Court wound up overturning, recognizing that civil lawsuits, especially ones that result in big money judgments, can chill speech every bit as much as criminal penalties. And I'm really worried about this kind of abuse of civil litigation or slap suits that we might see big oil and gas or other big money industries engaging in to silence the voices of protesters, most of whom don't have a lot of money in their pocket.
Greg, how did you find out about the legislation and what are people talking about it, you know, in Central Ohio? What are they saying, people in organizations like yours?
Well, I'm you know, in with a bunch of organizations around Ohio, especially the Ohio Community Rights Network. We're part of actually there's a national community rights network as well. So we, you know, keep up on all these types of things. There's local groups and there's the Center on Health and Environmental Justice, Buckeye Environmental Network, Teresa Mills, who keeps us up on a lot of this stuff. She's really, really good about keeping up on legislation and committee hearings and all these things. So there's kind of a network that we're trying to get in there when we can to talk to them and try and convince them that people in Ohio don't want this stuff.
What's your sense about how lawmakers are responding to the things you said?
Well, we had over 100 people give written and spoken testimony. Mm-hmm. We had so many that Representative Callender and the Public Utilities Committee, at one committee, he actually restricted opposing testimony to 8 people in that committee hearing, and he didn't restrict the proponent testimony. And so, you know, that's how it's going. And so they get the sense that people in Ohio really are catching on that this is just kind of something to take away people's freedoms, but they're ignoring it. And what I said in my testimony basically that they're on the wrong side of the future of Ohio with this thing, rather than being, you know, toning down and tamping down on protests and so forth, they really need to be looking at what we need to do for the future of Ohio in terms of energy. You know, climate change is now the big elephant in the room. We've been focusing on the local damages to water and people's getting sick locally in Ohio over the last 8 years. But really, we're now seeing that with the methane issue, that all this oil and gas and the pipelines, everything has to change.
You know, Dan Takagi, there's protesting and then there's damaging with malicious intent. Yeah. Those are two very different things, are they not?
They certainly are. And look, you can certainly have a general law that prohibits people from engaging in vandalism or other kinds of property crimes. Nobody is disagreeing with that. And in fact, we already have lots of such laws on the book in Ohio and every other state, and there's been no showing whatsoever that those laws are inadequate to deal with the exceedingly rare instances in which a protester or somebody else may engage in an act of vandalism. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about a law that is very, very broadly and vaguely written, but clearly has the intent to suppress protest activities and to chill both groups and individuals on pain of potential jail time and exorbitant fines from engaging in those activities.
Going back to that civil cause of action, that civil piece of all of this that, you know, would empower corporations against people with much shallower handbook, you know, pocketbooks, does that require a criminal action to in order to have a civil cause of action? So would you need to have the local sheriff or the local police chief, you know, the local prosecutor file charges?
It's a great question, Ann, and the answer is no, it wouldn't. And this is why civil lawsuits, especially lawsuits brought by big companies that can afford to hire a fleet of lawyers, are actually in some instances even more threatening to freedom of speech than criminal actions. We tend to focus on criminal laws. You know, that's what most of the TV shows about law involve. And criminal laws can certainly chill freedom of speech, especially when they have jail time or big fines attached to them. But civil lawsuits can actually be worse because you don't have the intermediary of a prosecutor. Look, for a criminal case to be brought, you actually have to persuade a prosecutor that the criminal law has been violated and that it is likely that you'll be able to prove criminal liability beyond a reasonable doubt. Moreover, the accused in a criminal case, if he or she can't afford a lawyer, has the right to have one provided. None of those protections exist in a civil lawsuit. So in many ways, I think that civil lawsuits, especially when it's coming from a big company, are even more threatening to freedom of speech than criminal cases.
If you have a question or comment, 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Where does the right to protest impede private property rights? As I think Jen, and it might have been you, Dan Takagi, Jen from Sierra Club mentioned earlier that a lot of times, yeah, this property is not technically private property. It's been taken.
Yeah. And in fact, there's a provision in the Ohio bill saying, or in the existing Ohio law that would be incorporated here, saying it's no defense that some of the stuff may be taking place on public property. It is no defense to a charge under this section that the land or premises involved was owned, controlled, or in custody of a public agency.
So they cover that one. Meaning it doesn't really have anything to do with private property,
yeah,
per se.
Well, in some instances, the protests may be on private property. But in some instances, the law could at least potentially be used, or at least used to threaten people who are engaged in protests on, say, the sidewalk or other, you know, public easements around a privately owned facility. So I think there is a real risk of this law being misused to suppress freedom of speech, and indeed that's the point. And I just have to say again, the counterargument that we need these laws to suppress vandalism or trespassing, it's a red herring. There are already laws on the books that do this. Why do you need this specific law that targets properties and activities of the oil and gas industry, the petroleum industry, chemical, natural gas, telecom? There's only one reason for this law, and that's to suppress legitimate protesting activities and the groups that engage in it.
Greg Pace?
I'd like to add to that there was even in Pennsylvania, they don't have this law yet, but there was a woman, I think it was in Pennsylvania, back in the last year, who did exactly that. She allowed people on her property. She didn't want the activities, the oil and gas activities on her property. She allowed people on the property where they told them to leave. She kept them there. She spent 6 weeks in jail for doing this on her own private property that she lived on, and she ended up spending 6 weeks in jail because she refused to, kick people off her property when they were disrupting the activity.
Is that a thing? I mean, obviously it took place in Pennsylvania, but Dan Takagi, what?
Could I imagine the Ohio bill being used in such a way? I could imagine it, actually, because—
Because she's one of the conspiring groups, yeah,
exactly. There's language in here not only about conspiracy, which is what the ALEC model bill refers to, but also about complicity, which is defined to include solicitation, which is, of course, a form of speech, asking somebody to do something, or aiding and abetting, which, if read broadly, could at least conceivably encompass not only the person who actually breaks the law by, say, trespassing or vandalizing, but somebody or some entity that's encouraging them or is viewed by the court or a jury as encouraging them or aiding them in some way.
And then just to go back to the Standing Rock Reservation example in the Dakotas, part of the protests occurred in part on reservation property. And there was a question among the reservation leaders there about whether or not they should permit that. Mm-hmm. This hypothetically would have put them in the line of fire as well, or not, because it's a are they protected? Do they have different kinds of protections than, say, the private property owner in Pennsylvania?
Yeah, I think I would at least be worried about that kind of scenario, whether they'd have a defense in a criminal case. I don't know. But again, we have to think about this not from just from the perspective of would a criminal prosecution or a civil lawsuit win, but how's this law going to be perceived and used?
Yeah.
And the likelihood is that people are going to have their speech chilled. If there's even a risk of $100,000 fine or some sort of civil liability, especially if you're not somebody who's wealthy, that is likely to discourage you from engaging in legitimate constitutionally protected protest activity. And that's exactly the point of slap suits.
Right. And it's, you know, you've got the vagueness doctrine and the overbreath doctrine, I think that's what it's called. And this is just flies in the face of all these doctrines of just where regulations or you're trying to impose regulations on people that really they can take wherever they want to in the courts. And that's what we've run into in the community rights movement for the last 5 years in Ohio. You know, it started with the Secretary of State's office. He specifically, it was his whim to tell the Board of Elections not to put our rights of initiative, our initiatives on the ballots in Ohio. And then they codified it 2 years ago in the Senate, you know, with the House Bill 463. So it's just, this is all part of this stamping down on the rights of citizens to go up against corporations doing things that we don't like to do.
You never thought you'd have to become a First Amendment expert to be an environmental activist, but unfortunately that's the world we're living in today.
Well, I thank you both. Daniel Takagi, thanks for your time today. I appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, Ann.
Dan Takagi is a law professor at Ohio State University Morris College of Law, and Greg Pace, a local local environmental activist focused on energy issues and has also testified before the Ohio General Assembly on this bill that we've been talking about today that is patterned and is being used around the country to staunch protests and so-called critical infrastructure sites such as gas lines. Thanks, Greg, for joining
us.
Thank
you.
And thanks to everybody else for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.